This is Alex Pardo, and you're listening to episode 214 of the Flip Empire Show.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Guys, what's up? I'm just going to launch right into it. You have to listen to this episode. It is straight fire. I'm telling you, and that's not hyperbole. I'm pretty confident that you're going to agree with me. I got a gentleman by the name of Aaron Chapman, who we get into some deep conversation here. And he's got we talk so much about mindset, but just the perspective he has, the experience that he comes with, life experience, things that have happened to him in his life. Guys, you have to listen to this episode. I usually come on here and I give a little bit of an introduction, you know, as to who I'm interviewing and why you should listen. I'm just asking you to trust me on this. Listen to this episode from start to finish because it's packed with wisdom, packed with knowledge, and something that I know you can really just draw from to help you in your personal and business life. So without further ado, guys, launching right in to my podcast masterclass with Aaron Chapman. Mr. Aaron Chapman, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Doing really, really, really well. How are you, Alex?
I'm amazing, man. I'm amazing. There's a guy that I think we probably both know that every time I ask him how you doing, he says I'm far better than I deserve, and I like that, man. So I'm gonna piggyback on that one. I'm doing far better than I deserve, and I appreciate you rejoining us. So let me kind of put myself here. I'll throw myself under the bus. So guys, last week Aaron, you know, has been super just gracious and generous with his time. So last week, Aaron and I recorded about a 45-minute podcast, only to find out that my recorder did not work for whatever reason. I'm sure I dropped the ball somewhere. And it that's kind of painful because forget about my time, but just like Aaron's time. And like, you know, fortunately for me, you know, we're 214 episodes in. It's only the second time it's ever happened, but it taught me a lesson because it's frustrating and it's painful to reach out to the other person and say, hey man, you know, this happens. And he was just so cool about it. And right before we started recording here, you know, now I have a better format, a better tool to use to record these things. And he just brought that to light. He says, look, as a result of that, this is what happened. And I think that's what, you know, listening to Aaron over the course of the next 30 to 45 minutes, you're going to see that he just has a very different perspective, mindset, and outlook on life and business. And, you know, I don't want to get too much into it because he's just got some amazing stories. And just, he's lived such a, he just has a lot of unique experiences and things that we can draw parallels from and learn. So, Aaron, having said all of that, man, thank you once again for hopping back on here, dude.
Well, not a problem at all, man. And interestingly enough, remember that whole process of getting the last one started, I had to have that system reloaded on my computer, and the tech support guys were having a hard time with that. And we finally got that operational, and then that was not working on your side. It was an interesting exercise to go through that. And I remember we talked a little bit about the patience factor. And I found that, you know, some things when it's out of your control, you got to let it roll and you got to let yourself not get frustrated. But when it's within your control, then I'm not saying you can allow frustration to set in, but you can actually allow your drive to help you focus on how do I solve the problem. Some yeah. things we can't solve, we'll do the best to pull in the right people to solve, but then allow the solve to happen. And with this, you know, I'm thinking there's probably a damn good reason why it didn't work. And I'm guessing maybe there's something that was left unsaid, and that there's somebody's going to pick up this podcast and listen to it. And whatever was unsaid in the last one is necessary in this one, because it's going to change that person's life. And if it's one person that gets something out of this that wouldn't have otherwise, then it's worth the re-recording. It's worth the change, the steps we had to go through to get here, you know. And I appreciate you being willing to bring me back on, because that could have also been an opportunity for you to say, hey, that guy sucked. So it's probably good that we don't have him on yeah. the podcast. So that right there says, I get to express my gratitude. You let me back on a second time. You know, I'm today I'm in Chicago. I live in Arizona, but I'm in Chicago at some meetings And so it's, you know, 6 a.m. here and it's relaxed and, you know, I'm kind of enjoying the opportunity.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, to your point, not only did I want to have you back on, so it's about 7 a.m. here in Miami, and this is the earliest podcast I've ever recorded. And when you and I were kind of going back and forth with rescheduling, I was like, you tell me what time. You could have told me 4 in the morning. I would have been behind the mic here, you know, looking forward to recording. So again, and I think everything you just said right there, Aaron, kind of speaks to what I talked about at the top of the show, is just your outlook, your perspective. You know, I remember when we recorded, or when we didn't record last week, we were talking about how life isn't what happens to you, but it's how you respond to what happens to you. So before we kind of get into mindset, and because we're definitely going to talk about the mindset of a real estate investor, and, you know, Aaron's going to kind of take you through his story and why you should care and what you're going to get out of that. But Aaron, just kind of give people a little bit. I talked about it in the intro, but just kind of fill in some of the gaps. Tell people, you know, who you are, what you do, and what your business looks like today, just to kind of set the groundwork, and then we'll take it from there.
Thank you. So I'm a husband of 22 years now, and father of 4. My son just turned 21 yesterday. Had to communicate with him on his birthday from my hotel room here in Chicago. And then I've got an 8-year-old daughter that works with me. So those who will interact with me will see emails from her, Isabel. She's on top of things with my calendar. She takes care of me and makes sure that I am scheduled out. And because if she doesn't, I'll double book like crazy. Got a 17-year-old daughter and then an 11-year-old daughter. And that one, she's awesome. They're all just absolutely awesome. And so it's amazing is their personalities, and everybody's going to say this that has children. The personalities are going to amaze you how vastly different they can be when they're only a couple of years apart. But that's that part of my life. That's my family. And then the business world, I finance investment real estate. Now I'm just like, kind of like any other loan officer out there. I have a license and I'm licensed in multiple states and I do loans. But what I discovered was early on that I really, really enjoyed working with the real estate investor, because the mindset of the real estate investor is something that I can identify with, the nuts and the bolts and the why would you buy this property and finance it for the returns. I don't quite identify with, you know, the home buyer as much, because there's so many vast, I guess, differences in why they would be driven to purchase something versus another. Mm-hmm. The emotional aspect of it, I still deal with a lot of them. And I still deal with a lot of people buying a house for the first time, helping them achieve that dream. But we don't quite as communicate as well, because we can't identify an emotion as easily as I can identify with nuts and bolts. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, my wife and I work with the sheriff's department in our local area. We are with their rescue unit. So I'm in charge of their technical rescue unit, which is all the high angle stuff, you know, people down cliffs, climbers, people that have fallen into crevices or caves, and we'll do technical rescue with ropes and pulley systems and that kind of thing. And then I'm also in charge of their off-road rescue team. So I helped found their off-road rescue team in 2012, wrote the guidelines for that, and then created a team around off-road rescue, worked with local fire departments on being able to learn how to extricate people out of you know, rolled vehicles out in the desert without using all the technical gear that they may have on a fire truck. We have to use wrenches and high lift jacks and chains and cut people out. So some really, really cool stuff. I get to go hiking and climbing and wheeling with air support. So you can't beat that, right? You get to go out in the desert and do whatever it is you enjoy doing, but you also have a helicopter inbound to get you in deeper or pull you out of it. I also am trained to rappel out of helicopters, and we get to do that. In fact, when I get back from this trip on the 26th, we do what we call recertification, where we work with the highway patrol and they'll take us and we'll rappel out of their helicopters and then get what they call a short hauled out, where they come in with a line you took in and they pull you out of the desert. So real fun stuff. I've been doing it for 8 years. Come December will be my 9th year with the department. And it's getting to the point where we've done it such a long time, and I now train everybody that we're getting ready to possibly pass the torch in the next little while.
Man, that's incredible. That's incredible. First off, I think I speak for everyone when I say thank you for your service. Obviously, it's highly dangerous what you do, and if it wasn't for people like you, who knows So we need, you know, people like you doing that kind of stuff. And on a second note, dude, next time we get together, I gotta buy you some drinks because I'm sure you have some crazy, crazy stories.
There's been some really cool stuff, really awesome stories. And I can go on and on about those. Just some of those, you think that you just had that once in a lifetime rescue, that thing that you can put in a book and make a bestseller. And then 2-3 months later, you have another one that was even cooler, right? Some stuff that just, you know, there's some things that I'm surprised we made it out. I truly am. We as rescuers should have been dead on that. But yet we were, by the grace of God, we were able to get out of there and dig deep and use our skill sets and our training. And just like you hear the old adage, you don't rise to the occasion, you fall to the lowest level of your training. Mm-hmm. Because of that and the people out there who train rescuers, who dedicate their life to that, I owe them my life because they had put a lot of information into me that I was able to use out there in the field and actually kept me alive and the people I was with.
Wow. So I definitely want to get into your story as to how you got into the, you know, the money business basically. But before I even get that, I kind of want to just pull out a little further what we're talking about now, as far as, you know, we touched on mindset. You just talked about like some of the, just the crazy experiences that you've had and some of the service that you've been involved in over the course of several years. What has that done for you as far as working with investors now? So as far as, you know, some of those experiences, the mindset, the training that you've received on that side of things, how has that impacted or helped you when it comes to your actual core business right now and working with investors?
Really is the opportunity to understand people has helped me more than anything, because a person's going to be driven to do whatever they do for different reasons. And the real estate investor has probably the more common drive for what they do. And I'd seen this evolution over the years of a person, you know, would you agree that when you're looking at the economic breakdown of the United States and really of the globe, that the majority of the U.S. economy is made up of the consumer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think the last statistic that I had seen was 72% of the U.S. economy is the U.S. consumer. I had also been at an event earlier this year where there was a contributor from Bloomberg there. She also worked for the central bank at one point, and she had made a claim, and I'm trying to remember the exact number, but it was like 19.6 or 19.7% of the global economy was the U.S. consumer. So that's a big deal, right? It's a big deal to think that there is a lot of things being driven by individuals buying things. And when you think about that, I'd applied that to what I knew about people buying real estate, and I'd noticed that they, many times, especially when they're starting out the same way a consumer would, from spending money and going into debt. And then as they evolve in that business, they start to finally realize later on that they're not spending money and they're not going into debt. They're literally basically now the CEO of their real estate investment firm. Hmm. And what they're doing is they're buying a living, breathing, cash flowing business for the market value of its sole asset. That's a very, very significant thing to realize. So mainly those are people buying turnkey investments across the country, right? And what I mean by a turnkey, that's been sold as somebody who is buying a piece of property, rehabbing it, and then selling it. And then that same entity who sold it now has a property management arm. They're going to manage it and maintain it. So when you're buying a turnkey, you're buying something that's been rehabbed and ready to rent. That's how it's being sold. But I think it's being sold short because in reality, what it is a business based upon its asset that has a full operations division already built into it. So you don't have to look for who's going to be my boots on the ground, who's going to help me find the markets that are going to work, who's going to manage this property, who's going to maintain it, how is this business going to continue to work. The people are already there. And many times they've got decades of experience already built in, and you don't have to worry about that operations part of your division. It's there. So the real estate investor can literally mentally put them at their board table. And I do a lot of business with people who do national, they call them aggregators, people who go and find real estate all over the country and then vet it out ahead of time and then bring their clients out there and say, hey, we're going to work with this person in this state and they're going to find properties in this city and they're going to rehab them, manage them, maintain them for you. Now your operations division is built mm-hmm. in this city and we're going to go to the next city and the next city. And they verify that this is all going to work. So how I present myself in those first conversations is I'm applying for the job of CFO for their organization. And what I mean by that is when a CEO has got a CFO, he needs somebody to explain to him, hey, here's the financial structure of our business and here's how we're going to further it financially without putting the business in jeopardy. We need to make sure that it's solvent. We need to make sure that it's going to continue to profit and cash flow and that we're going to have reserves continuing to grow so we can weather any storm. That's the role I try and take. I know that most people say, well, you're a loan guy and that you make money by doing loans. Sure, that's how I generate revenue. That's how anybody generates revenue in my business. But we take it a step further to analyze their business and give them insight to make sure that they have more information than they would have had before to make decisions. Because if their business fails, mine's in jeopardy as well. And you think about it, all the big banks, you can name any big bank on your mind, whether it's even the local banks, and what they have proven without any sort of, in any manner, they have proven without any shadow of a doubt that you give a monkey a phone and some training, it can close loans. It's not a really, really hard business.
Yeah.
But it can be because real estate investors are not looked at as favorably as they should be, in my opinion. But taking that step further and helping them to analyze and structure is a little bit of a different thing that most will not do or cannot do because they don't have the experience. Now, have you heard the term, good judgment comes from experience and experience comes from bad judgment?
Yeah, man, so you mentioned that last week and I wrote it down. I absolutely love that. I had never heard that until you mentioned it.
You know, it's something that I had heard years ago and I had to sit down one day and really dig. I was just sitting there thinking about some things and it popped into my head. I have no idea who said it, but it's a phenomenal statement. Doesn't it just tell the entire story?
Yeah, it does.
So I ask that of everybody I talk with and anybody who's heard this is hearing this podcast. If you ever get on the phone with me, I'll ask that question. You'll know the answer to it because I'm going to give it now, all these things. And so I'll apologize for regurgitating, but I also heard that if you don't hear something at least 7 times, you won't remember it.
Right.
So the reason I ask that question is because many people are never going to be able to get all the experience they need to be able to do all the aspects of this business. Right. You know, experience is a miserly bitch and it takes a year, years and sometimes an entire lifetime to get all of it, to get the entire lessons taught. And at that time, a life is gone and cannot apply all the wisdom of experience because of how long it takes to get it. So what I take the real estate investors to, you don't have to know these things. Some of the greatest CEOs on the planet are literally the dumbest people in the room. They, and not because they are ignorant people, it's because they know enough that they need to put the best people in the other seats. So they're making decisions based upon the best information.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to, if they have to know it, then they have the wrong person in the other seat. So when I apply for that CFO job, I'll explain to them a little bit about my experience. You know, I've been doing this since 1997. I called out of the mines in New Mexico back in 97, had to find a job and ended up getting pointed this direction and started out as a telemarketer in the mortgage industry way back then. Well, what has evolved now is with that 20 years experience of actually just writing and doing loans and working with people was my experience has grown exponentially when you look at the transactional experience of a regular loan originator. So if you look up the statistics of licensed loan originators within the United States, I can't remember how many tens of thousands there is. They say the average closings is 3 to 4 per month. I'd heard the statistic was even worse before, 0 to 2 per month. And then I was trying to be generous by giving them 3, but then I re-looked it up and just in the last few years with where the rates are, that had actually grown to 3 to 4 per month. So that's anywhere from 36 to 48 transactions per year for the average person, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that's an average year's experience in our industry, if I look back at 2017, I closed 676 transactions. Wow. For real estate investors. And that was the ones that are just documented within my organization. There's other ones that I've helped and tried to put together with other people that would call me up. So there's a lot of other involvement that I've had, but those are the 676 attributed to my name. And so, and I don't have any other loan officers on my team. Every single deal hits my desk. I'm not one that has a team of 5 or 6 people that go out and find loans and have to put them in my name because they work on my team. That's not it. I have operations people and it's me. So mm-hmm. I've talked to every single one of those people. We've had those conversations. We help them structure their business. So if you take that and figure, okay, if the average person in this industry is getting 1 year's experience doing 36 to 48 transactions, and I'm doing 600 plus, that can range between 15 and 18 years experience in 1 year. Mm-hmm. And the year before that, I did over 400. The year before that, I did over 300. So you can see the extreme amount of experience packed into each year when you're looking at transactional experience. And the reason I bring that up, because it's important when a person is deciding, who am I going to put in that left seat at my board table to help me on the financial piece? Who am I going to trust with information when I turn to them and say, hey, here's our scenario. What do you think?
Yeah.
There's a pretty good chance I've seen that scenario, because I have seen a lot of people's decisions going into play, and I've got to see the outcome. So we can take that and look at it from an actual practical application of the decision and what the outcome was, and allow that CEO to make his decision.
Aaron, let me ask you this. I mean, so there's a huge, huge delta between what the average, you know, loan officer originator does on a yearly basis to what you do. What do you attribute that to? Because I always, and the reason I ask this is because I love just kind of picking the brains and dissecting the thought process of people that are just highly successful. You're probably in the top half percent, if not like even, you know, even greater than that. Like, what is it that you're obviously not your, you know, just somebody who helps an investor gets financing. I mean, one of the things I'm hearing that I learned about you is that you're a coach, you're a consultant. You, like you said, you have a conversation with these people. You find out what their goals are. You find out, you talked about them being the CEO of their business. You know, that's a mindset that not a lot of people have. Is that what you would attribute your success to, or is it something else?
That's a solid question. I think that there's a combination of things, and it's interesting to be able to look back and actually quantify success. Like you brought up the top 1%, and I've received a notification this year. I don't really pay attention to the numbers until it all comes out and everybody starts telling me what happened. And one of the things that happened this last year, not only did I get ranked in the top 1%, I was ranked number 12 nationally by units closed. And I do know that others that were on that ranking have people within their staff that are other loan officers that go out and ferret out their own business, but put it in that person's name. Mm-hmm. So I don't even know where I really rank if a person wants to say, what do I do just individually? But going back to the whole success piece. So, you know, now in my, just in the numbers, I'm like, okay, yeah, you're right. I mean, I didn't even realize that we were in that kind of a spot. Mm-hmm. But the success has come, I think, from, you know, starting out is becoming this real, extremely transparent and real. I discovered early in my career that I had people telling me how to dress, how to act, how to look, how to talk. And I was being pushed all over the place when I was really young. And then one day I'm looking around and they're all gone. And it's just me still there. They've gone to completely different industries. And it hit me. I'm like, this is interesting. The guys who are telling me how I should do things here couldn't make it here. So hell with them. I dug my leather jacket back out, let my hair grow long about to my shoulders, grew a goatee. And I went about life like that. Yeah. And I decided to get a little bit bolder with things. And what started to happen is my income started to grow faster the more I looked like me. And I ran into one of those guys at a Starbucks. His name was Bob, and he was standing in front of me. And he looked back at me and looked back forward. He didn't even recognize me. So I smacked him and said, Bob, you asshole. And he looks back at me.
I can picture you doing that, by the way.
and he looks at me and he's like, Aaron? I'm like, yeah, what's going on, man? He goes, I didn't hardly recognize you. He's like, what are you doing nowadays? I'm like, same thing. I'm still at the same institution. He goes, and then he gestures to me, right? Just my whole person. He goes, what's with this? I taught you better than that. I told him, you taught me how to lie with people with my appearance. So when I changed and became who I was on the outside to match my inside, the trust started to happen. I tripled my income. And his face just went completely flush. He's like almost dumbfounded. He's like, really? Like, yeah, I don't need to be you to be successful. And apparently you taught me being you is not successful because you went back to doing advertising.
I would have loved to have seen his face at this point.
Oh, it was priceless. And it taught me right there. You know, you've got to go forward in being you. And so I just continue to allow that to evolve. Right. And then I even got more real with it. You know, I continue to get to the extent that I just, I have a conversation with people on the phone as if they're my friend. And if that person is my friend on the phone, they will converse back the same way. But if they want to really build up barriers and put walls between us and be overly professional and be like they're sitting in a courtroom, then we know we're not going to get along. So that they start to separate that way. So I separate people very, very quickly. That has also helped in the success side of it, because if you can't trust who you're working with, then don't work with them. Now, I had a client just in the last couple of days. You know, I talked to my attorney and I saw this little thing in your guys' application. And I'm not a fan of that. And it's in writing. It's like, that's just, I told him that's just something that's embedded and there's nothing I can do about it. Just know we're not going to do that, because we're going to go forward the way you feel, because this is a relationship. He's like, it's in writing. I said, well, you got to work with whoever you trust. That's cool. And I'm cool with that. And then, of course, the biggest contributor to success to this point was from a really recent experience. I had a business partner who something happened that he, back in 2015, decided just gut me without me even paying attention. You know, pretty much just destroyed my business where I started over November 1st, 2015. I had to start over and with one deal again. You know, for like the 10th time in my business, I'm starting over again. And what I did is I decided to focus on that one phone call that came in on November 1st. And then the second phone call that same day and the third phone call that same day, until all I focused on were those people. And I got to where I was so busy with those that I would come in at 5 o'clock in the morning, leave 7 o'clock at night. And my ops manager, Ellen, would do the same thing. And we just worked every deal like it's the only deal we had. We didn't look at any of the reports, didn't look at any of the numbers, just focused on those people because those are what mattered. And it really got us to where we concerned about the people more than the numbers by far. And in that short window of time from November 1st till about June of the next year, I was ranked in the top 10 of the company within no time, which was amazing to me to start over, but then, you know, end up in the top 10 ranking. And I learned another lesson there, because when he had done that, when he had made that choice, I'm like, why would you do this? This makes no sense to me. We were actually growing fast. He said, it's nothing personal, just business. And all of you, have you ever heard that term said to you, or have you ever said that term?
I've heard it said to me.
Yeah. And so I was in a room where he was there, and there was a bunch of other managers there, and they asked me to be the anchor speaker at this event. And that's where I learned I was in the top 10, which blew me away. And I was I was speaking at a corporate event, and I asked that same question to everybody in there. And I said, who here has heard this term? And everybody's hand raised, right? And I could see the look on his face, because he knew that he said it to me. And then I said, who could you attribute that to? Who was it? Was it Carnegie? Was it Rockefeller? Was it Barnum? And I'm going to ask you the same thing. Who said that? Who's the first guy to say it?
I don't know.
His name was Otto Berman. He was an accountant for the mob back in the 30s. So when he's coming into a situation with a couple of pipe hitters, or if he's leaving a situation, that was the statement that he made. And that's who it's attributed to. I can't confirm for sure because nobody has an actual quote or recording, but that's who it's attributed to. And so I explained to them that there was a very nefarious person who coined that phrase. And in my opinion, this is Aaron Chapman's opinion, that if a person is going to say that or use that, or you having it being said to you, the reason it's being said is because there's absolutely no combination of words in the English language that can be strewn together to justify the chicken shit that's about to go down.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and so I learned several things through that experience, and it's such a recent experience that you have to have extreme, interest in the other person's benefits. When I started discovering that, it wasn't about the numbers, it wasn't about what was going on with my business, but about those individual names, then I started to really develop, an understanding of how to drive my business. You know, the more concern I had towards theirs, mine was just taken care of by itself. And so it started to grow rather rapidly. And then more lessons were learned. You know, I speak a lot on the practical application of gratitude. And that has also been a massive contributor to what's happened over these last couple of years. And in 2016, you know, I had an employee who, when I'd hired her on back in 2015, we had talked about her her wages and her, you know, where she was starting out at. And then as she had put some time in, we would relook at it and we determine what would be, you know, her increase in base pay and potential bonus, depending upon how she had done and what she contributed to everything. Mm-hmm. And if I remember correctly, it was late 2015 when that time came, when we had an opportunity to sit down and talk over, her particular scenario and how we were going to adjust for her. And as I'm looking at the her income at the time and what I was intending to give to her, I thought I had a pretty good number figured out, but I thought I'd ask a couple people and see what they thought. And I have a client of mine who at the time was an executive at Expedia. And I asked her, I said, what do you think? She goes, well, the average person's increase would be about 2% per year, maybe 3% if they've done very well. Okay. Like, that's pretty damn low compared to what I was thinking. So I told her what I was thinking. She goes, there's no way you'll ever get that approved. I'm like, well, that's because I, you know, I still work for a firm. I have to ask them, even though it's kind of my business within the firm, I still have to get approvals on these expenses. So I'm like, well, I'll give it a shot. So I even called my boss and told him, he goes, there's no way. I'm like, well, I said 2-3% is insulting. I said, I can't give her 2-3%. So what I'm looking at is 10%. And I'm also looking at a 30% bump in her bonus for certain metrics. I said, what do I have to do to get this approved? Because she deserves it. He said, you have to go, you're going to have to prove to us why she deserves it. I need to be able to have this all in writing. I have to be able to quantify this with our board. So I went ahead and started going through emails and production reports and started looking to see different things that she had done that had contributed to a change in growth and be able to actually quantify this. And I had to write this up. It took me 2 weeks. It was a very miserable exercise, but it was to her benefit. So yeah. I finished the exercise, got it into them. A couple of days later, I get a thumbs up. They approved what I had given to them, which I thought was awesome. Because one, I suck at that kind of thing. Man, I when I introduce what we do, I'd introduce my staff as the wizards behind the curtain, and I'm the smoke mirrors and bullshit. So I don't profess to be really good at those kind of things. But since it was for the benefit of somebody else, I found that I was able to accomplish that. And so I was excited. It was time to sit down with her. I was going to show her what I'd, you know, basically go over the stuff that I had shown them to justify the increase. And then I couldn't wait to give her what I had been able to secure in her behalf. And it's kind of like having your child that you know has been looking at this bike for the last year, and now it's Christmas time, and you can't wait to see their eyes.
Yeah, you just want to see their face. Yeah.
Exactly. That's the payoff for you, just to see how happy they are. So that was my anticipation for this meeting. Well, I'm sitting there, we went over all the data, and then it came time for me to, you know, here's the present, man, you get to open it up. And then I slid that over and I was kind of excited. And when she got the information, her face kind of got to a little bit of a twisted kind of a look. And she's like, that's it? It's like, you really couldn't do any better than this?
Oh, that hurts. Jesus.
But it was painful. It was absolutely painful. After what we had to do to get there, you know, and I had this massive anticipation, I went completely the opposite direction. You know, and I ask a lot of people, say, how would you respond if there was absolutely no rules? You could say whatever your gut said, right? And a lot of people come back, so I would just ask her what she was thinking. It's like, no, you wouldn't. I said, that's your coaching mind. That's your rational mind thinking.
Are you effing kidding me?
Exactly. Or you ungrateful little, go ahead and fill in the blank, right? I was so damn angry that that's what I was thinking. And I had to pause before I responded because I almost did that. I'm like, want something? You don't get this raise. In fact, you don't have the job anymore. Go clean out your desk. Get the hell out. That's how mad I was. I was willing to not just take what she was just given, but take everything. You know, it's kind of like if you bought your kid that bike that you had to save all year long, right? You didn't eat lunch at work and things like that. And you're sticking money away so you can buy this bike and you hand it to him. And he just kicks and says, that's crap now. Nobody has that anymore. What would you do? You're like, want something? Fine. Don't get the bike back. Go dig everything out of your room and bring it downstairs to the front yard because I'm going to set it on fire.
It's a complete lack of gratitude.
Yeah. And I was angry as hell. But so I backed off of that, went into coaching mode, and I did finally ask, so what were you thinking? You know, if you would, maybe you want to look closer at going to a situation like this and saying, hey, thank you. I would really like to get to this level. So what do I got to do to get there? right? So we can work through that. So I started kind of coaching at that, but there was always this kind of a thing there now. And it really just ate at me. I was angry as hell and I had to really taper off of that. Well, later that same week, I had, was exiting the freeway coming to my office, and there was, I see a guy standing at the end of the freeway exit ramp with his cardboard sign. And there was something about this guy, more so than most other, people that are standing there on the side of the road, you know, the homeless and whatever. And I always am one that believes that if we're blessed with extra, we should give to others and not try and question where they're going to take their money, the money. Right. Oh, he's just going to buy drugs or alcohol. Yeah. It's not up to me.
Yeah. It's not that's
generous.
Right. Yep.
Exactly. So, and I contribute, or at least, I believe, fully believe that the more you give, the more you get, period. Cause we are now a conduit for blessings for others. So that's a whole other different theology, but you get into, I'm looking at this scene. There's something about this guy. Now, earlier, way back when I first started my industry, I was just so darn broke at one point that I had to look for change in my truck and on the ground to find enough money to be able to get gas to get home from looking for a job. And it was actually the same day that I was introduced to this industry. Well, from then on, I've been hiding cash in my truck in certain places. You know, I have a few bills here and there to be sure that that never happens to me again. I think that's I don't know if that's a practice out of fear or habit anymore. Wow. Well, I reached to where I had one. I knew there a bill was right there within immediate reach. And in fact, there's only one spot I keep it. So there's just one in there. So I rolled down the window, I held it out. And the gentleman walked over to me and he accepted it, thanked me. And as he turned to walk away, he's unfolding it. And he looks back at me and he holds it up. He says, "Are you serious, man?" I'm like, "Yeah, why?" He goes, "This is $20, man." It's like, "Yeah, cheers." He walks right back up to me and my hand is up on my window, right? You know, with the window down. He reaches up to grab my hand, pulls it towards his chest, bows his head, and audibly says a prayer of thanks to God, then asks a blessing on me.
Yeah, what an incredible story.
Well, after he's done praying, he raises his head to look at me. He's looking at me in the eyes and there's tears streaming down his cheeks and he's thanking me profusely. Well, if you know Arizona drivers, the light had turned green by that time and they're already honking. And I'm just really engulfed in this experience. And we exchanged, you know, God bless you to each other. And I moved on. And then it hit me that I felt guilty that I only had $20. Mm. It's just overwhelming guilt. I'm like, if he had a square, I'd swipe my card. No, I would willingly have given him any cash I had in the truck, but that's all I had.
Yeah.
And then the next thing that hit me is like, whoa, that is a practical application of gratitude. I've listened to The Secret. I've seen all these different statements on gratitude. I've been in meetings where people say you don't get out of bed unless you have three new things to be grateful for because it changes how you look at your day and you have a better feeling. And I agree with that. I agree with everything that's said, but nobody ever said there was a practical application. And I stumbled across it between two people. One was given much and I felt like I was spat in the face and I wanted to take everything back. Not just what I gave, but everything that I'd ever contributed to that person's life. I wanted back in that instant. Another one, I gave him as little as $20. And because of his response of gratitude, I wanted to give him everything I possibly can and felt guilty that I didn't have more. So then I come to the realization that's how it works with other people. It's not something just between me and God. It's not just something about how I feel. It's something about me and everybody else. And if I express my gratitude to those people, then they will contribute more to me. And when they express their gratitude to me, I'll contribute more to them, period. That's just how it works. There's just this exchange, this unwritten law in the universe that says that's how it's supposed to work. And so now I start attributing that to my business. And finding that I need to be grateful for every single person. And so I learned a lesson there, a really, really deep lesson that has helped me tremendously in my business, especially when you take what was stated by this presenter, you've got to have three new things to be grateful for every day, or you don't get out of bed. And then I had this homeless man praying, giving thanks to God for his most recent blessing and a blessing on me for helping him. So yeah. Now what I do is I take the names of the people who have been referred to me and the names of the referral source, and I take those to God every morning. And I thank him for the opportunity to have them in my life, for them contributing to my life. And then I do ask a blessing upon every single one of them, that their lives are blessed and that their businesses are blessed and that they can continue to grow themselves and that their families are blessed. And so I learned this lesson from a homeless man on how to act and how to treat things that you're given. And then the other individual on the other end, my former employee, I also have great gratitude for her, because if she didn't respond that way, mm-hmm. I wouldn't have learned it. You know, and so some people's like, well, you know, we'll say, well, you're still angry with her. I was like, no, it was not a matter of anger with her. I was angry with the response, not her at all. And I was angry with her at the moment, but as the time grew, I actually, a huge gratitude had enveloped me when I think of her, because if she had not had that response, if she had not reacted by her gut, there's a lot of lesson that would not have been taught to me. And I would not be able to teach the world this. I would not be able to take an actual practical application with two completely contrasting events and be able to teach the lesson associated with them without having such a contrast happen with us within that window. So I look at her as also another emissary from God to teach me a lesson. And so now when she needs help, if she calls, I'm there. If there's times that we've gone out and I've talked with her about her business, how can, you know, and coached her a little bit on how to expand that. And she's in the industry and trying really hard and she's struggling. And I know the struggle is necessary. If you don't have that struggle, you do not have a foundation and you cannot build a skyscraper on a 4-inch slab. And so I am eternally grateful to her for allowing me the opportunity to learn. And of course, this man on the side of the road and the lessons I learned from the presenter, talked about those, you know, those three new things to be grateful for. I've taken all those things together. And now that is probably one of the greatest contributors to my business of late, is the gratitude between each other and all the people that I work with across the country. I love working in the South because the people that you work with in the South and in the Midwest, they always tell you, I appreciate you all the time.
Yeah.
And even if you just had it out, you guys got into a slug fest over a deal that didn't go the way they thought. And you had to have it go a certain way because I'm governed by the banking world and it doesn't always make sense. Even at the end of that conversation, even if anger goes back and forth, they'll stop and say, I appreciate you, brother. And it's awesome. And that has really, really driven my business probably more than anything is that gratitude.
Man, there is so much power and wisdom in, like, what I want to encourage people to do is almost once you're done with this podcast, rewind to like maybe 10, 15 minutes. You know, you started with, and I've been writing some things down here on my iPhone that I just wanted to kind of bring to light. And I really, really want to encourage people to go back and listen to that because there's so much wisdom in it. Number one, being authentic, being your true self. You know, you talked about, you know, and by the way, guys, if you haven't seen Aaron's picture here go to flipempire.com /episode 214, you'll see his picture in the image there. So Aaron, I don't know if you guys know this, but I met Aaron. Actually, I didn't even really have an opportunity to meet Aaron. If I'm being truthful, like Aaron and I are part of a mastermind. And there was an overlap day where I was on my way out. He had just gotten there. And we didn't have an opportunity to meet, shake hands, and talk. But I remembered him because he's got a long ass, just really cool looking beard. Okay? Like the type of guy you'd see in a room and he'd stand out to you. And then somebody, a mutual friend in the mastermind, put us together, you know, via email a couple weeks later. And that's how Aaron and I have started to kind of build a relationship. And I mentioned to him, I said, you know, he goes to me, I'm the guy with the long beard. And I go, boom, I remember. Right. So that's the first thing I wrote down is, you know, you got to be yourself, whatever that looks like, whoever you are. Like, and I'm not saying like if you're an asshole to continue being an asshole, but, you know, be authentic. Be your true self is really what I'm trying to get at, right? That's the first thing I wrote down that I just think is packed with wisdom. The second thing that I wrote down, hearing your story and some of the stories you're telling, is that there's no success without adversity. Like there is absolutely nobody that has achieved any level of success that hasn't had bumps, bruises, and just hard knocks hit them, right?
Just one thing about that point there, I think that is the last form of natural selection we have left. If you're not going to get up from an ass kicking and you're going to stay there, then you have just selected yourself out of expansion and growth. Because we have, as a society, has completely nullified natural selection. Well, I do that by rescue. And then, of course, we've done that with the medical profession and with the us being taxed and handed out to those who don't want to work. You know, if you're trying to get a leg up and you need help, I always agree that we should be giving people help, but not just helping them perpetuate staying still. You know, so what you just pointed out is the bumps and the bruises, that is going to call out those who do not have the strength to move forward and who will not be successful because they can't handle success, because they can't go out and fight for it. And as far as I'm concerned, bruised, bleeding, missing limbs, I'm crossing that damn finish line. I don't care.
Yeah. It's a mindset thing. And it's, Aaron, it's almost as if you were looking at my notes, because the quote I wrote right below, "There's no success without adversity," is, "Don't hope for things to get easier. Hope for you to get better." And I don't know who said that. I'd love to take credit because I love that quote. Don't hope for things to get easier. Hope for you to get better. And so, man, and then you talked about gratitude, you know, and that's what I love about you, dude. This is only, you know, we've had a handful of conversations. Every time I talk to you, you know, you there's these things that happen, these negative experiences that some people would perceive as negative. However, in your mind, they're not negative. They're opportunities or lessons that God has placed in your life for you to then impact other people through the power of story, you know, and that's what I love about you, man. It's like, you know, when that minor inconvenience happened last week of, you know, we lost an hour or two and it didn't record, naturally, I was feeling some frustration inside and I was kind of dreading picking up the phone and sending that text and saying, "Hey dude, this is what happened." But I knew you'd understand, number one, but it's like, okay, well, where's the opportunity here? It's kind of the cliche term of, you know, taking lemons and turning it into lemonade. It's, think about that, guys. As you know, life happens, you know, sometimes things go south, the shit hits the fan, but how do you perceive those things? What can you draw from those experiences that can make you better in the long run? So, Aaron, man, on that note, I don't know if you have anything else to add, but I definitely want to, you know, have people reach out to you, especially like, you know, on the business side of things. Like, you know, we didn't get too much into that, but who is the who's like your ideal perfect client? Like, what does your avatar look like so that anybody listening in that needs you know, financing for their investment deals can connect with you and see if it's a fit?
You just said my perfect avatar is anybody who needs financing for investment deals. And really anybody who's listening to this, because the other thing that I'm trying to do is get that message of gratitude to the entire world. There's several other messages that I have, and we may have to schedule other podcasts, right? You know, about adversity and about how to sit down and really properly think out your vision and be very detailed, because there's some amazing things that have happened to me by writing things down. I couldn't believe that that truly works, and I exercised it, and holy hell does it work in amazing ways. And you have to share it with other people, and I have a phenomenal story about that I'd love to share with you sometime. But the thing is, right now, my mission not only is to help people build their business, but to get the practical of application of gratitude out to the world, and that people, especially the younger folks we have now that are of the mindset that, you know, I should have it because I deserve it because it's my right as an American, right? You know, I deserve just to have everything my dad's got because I'm here. And that's, they need to understand what it's like to go through a little bit of a beating and know that there's benefit in it and to be grateful for it in the journey. And the only way for me to get that out is because of people like yourself. And I appreciate the fact that you're allowing me to help get my message out and fulfill my mission. But I'm also asking that people who listen to this, if you like it, if it was something that resonated with you, if you believe it would help somebody else, I'm on a mission to get on TED Talks. And you can go right onto their site and you can nominate somebody from their site. And you can take this podcast and embed it in there, say, "Here's where he spoke before. And we want to see him on stage," because I am going to get there.
Oh, and I'm not even kidding you.
Thank you. And it's not for me. That's the other thing, that is, I'm not trying to get on there for Aaron Chapman. I'm trying to get on there for all the people who need to hear the message and all the people that I do business with, that they're trying to build their business up. And when they're saying, "Hey, you need to talk to Aaron Chapman because he's going to help you," I want them to, the people who are saying, "Okay, wait a minute, I know who that guy is." And it gives validity to the individuals I work with. So when I know that this person is doing solid, honest business and they need to have their business grow, and my name gets associated with that because of this particular lesson that I'm trying to teach the world, then it helps that person's business grow. Anything that I could help others to make theirs better and then hold them accountable, that they continue to do good business, that they don't get greedy, that you don't get self-centered. You stick on with making sure that somebody else is taken care of. And the best way to do that is to illustrate, that's how I run my business. That's how my success is built. And yours will be built the same way. So I need you to have faith that that's what you do. and here's why. And here I have all this information behind me to show that there is truth in what I say. And so please move forward with faith and with integrity. And so that way, those who are trying to buy those pieces of real estate and trying to build that business are actually able to have what their goal is, which is to have a living, breathing, operating business because of the right people in the seat. And I also want to be sure that you know, not only are the clients solvent, the organization that I represent is solvent, that the seller and their business is solvent, and that the people like yourself who are helping you take the message that they're your solvent and you have the ability to continue to grow your business. And that Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, our U.S. government, everything is solvent. Nothing is put at risk by what I do. That is such high integrity business that everybody flourishes as a result, that nobody is being taken advantage of. And if we are able to do that, then we're able to perpetuate this. The second somebody thinks that they can take advantage of a situation that, hey, I can get this government money and I can make it work for me. And then I can actually, and who cares what happens to them? That's wrong. It's very, very wrong thinking. You're going to destroy yourself with the same process. And I think that's what caused our crash. And what causes any of our problems within us financially is when it's about us. When it's about everybody else, you flourish as well. So I just pray that those who've heard this feel confident enough that they could pass that recommendation on. And that if, when that does happen, I don't say if, I say when that does happen, they will know that they contributed to the rest of the world getting this message.
Wow. I don't have anything else to add. I guess the one thing I really, just a call to action for everybody listening. I'd love for you to encourage to share this episode. And I don't say that selfishly because I want the podcast to grow, although I do. But more importantly, I want people to hear Aaron's message. And so that's the first one. If you guys just received any value from this, which I'm 100% sure you did, please share it with people, because I think people just need to adopt this mindset, and I'm confident that life will change for them with, you know, looking at things the way that Aaron does. And that comes from experience, you know, and just listening to shows like this. And then the second thing is, Aaron, we'll include the link, the TED Talks on the TED Talks website. I don't know exactly where that is, but to nominate someone, we'll include that in the show notes. Guys, I want to encourage you. I would love to see Aaron get on a stage, and I'll take it a step further. If I was a betting man, I'd bet on him being on that stage at some point in the future. So, you know, let's help him get to that so he can continue to spread this, this message. So Aaron, buddy, where can people connect with you, man?
They can go to my website, aaronbchapman.com. It'll always be out there. No matter where I go, what I do, aaronbchapman.com will always exist.
And that's a B as in boy, right?
Correct. But that's not my middle name.
Okay. Got it. Okay.
My parents wanted to get really cute with the initials. So if you want to figure that out.
ABC. Gotcha. All right. Cool, man. Well, hey, buddy, thank you again for hopping on here to re-record, man. I'm confident we got this thing nailed down, and I can't wait for this one, for people to hear this, because they need to hear this message. So just appreciate where you're coming from.
Thank you, man. I sincerely appreciate allowing me back on your show.
Okay. Awesome, guys. I'll catch you on the next one.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.